is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If you are eligible for a bed right now, you may go on a waiting list. Even the children, we have children in our isolation facilities.
That was Ugandan Health Minister Dr. Jane Ruth Eseng on the second wave of COVID-19 that is overwhelming hospital facilities. Details coming up also. ECOWAS has dispatched a delegation to Bamako to resolve the political crisis in Mali. And a senior UN official warns of a looming famine in Ethiopia's war-torn Tigray region. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The long-delayed corruption trial of former South African President Jacob Zuma finally kicked off today. Zuma and French arms company Thales face charges linked to a multi-billion dollar arms deal undertaken by the South African government soon after independence in 1994. However, as Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, Zuma already wants the lead prosecutor removed, leading to another postponement.
Almost 15 years after Zuma was first charged for corruption, the trial began at the Pietermaritzburg High Court in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal. State prosecutor Advocate Billy Downer read a list of up to 16 charges that include fraud, corruption, racketeering, and money laundering. The state argues that Zuma, who is being tried alongside Thales, solicited and received bribes as kickbacks from the massive arms contracts. As he has done through the case, Zuma rejected the charges.
Yes, I heard them. I plead not guilty.
Thales also pleaded not guilty, saying there was no evidence that it was involved in any of the charges. Zuma has told the court that he wants Downer taken off the case. Zuma's lawyer, Dalim Pofu, told the court that the prosecutor is in the group of those who think it's okay to allow state intelligence and political influence to interfere with his case. Mbofu pointed out that Zuma believed there was evidence of political interference in the case that Downer is ignoring.
The accused is of the strong view that his right to a fair trial is what is at stake. In truth, the current charges are as a result of Mr. Downer S.'s active participation in the political campaigns of a political party that is hostile towards me, in this case, the DA.
Zuma declined to give reasons for rejecting the charges, saying this will come at a later stage. Legal expert Tumi Musinyane says there is nothing wrong with playing his cards close to his chest.
It means that the president has an option to remain silent and let the state give all the evidence before it and later challenge that evidence. So there's nothing wrong with him saying that at this moment, I reserve my right not to divulge my defense, because that defense will only come relevant when he takes the stand to present his side of the story.
The trial has revealed serious divisions within the ruling African National Congress. Several senior ANC members attended the trial in support of the former president, despite party position that it will not align itself with members facing corruption charges. Zuma's staunch supporter, also the spokesperson of the party's Veterans League, Kalinias, was among those who were in attendance.
There is an overwhelming support and continuing support for President Zuma, and an outrage by many of us against what we consider to be a politically motivated and politically manipulated case.
Hundreds of ANC supporters were at the scene singing songs and chanting slogans in support of Zuma. The trial has been postponed to July 19th, so the state has time to study the voluminous papers filed by Zuma in his effort to have Downer removed. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Corruption investigators are trying to determine if South Africa's health minister played a role in awarding multi-million dollar contracts to friends and family for COVID-related communication services. Zwelile Mkhize has received widespread praise for his handling of the pandemic in the African countries hardest hit by coronavirus. He is particularly close to President Cyril Ramaphosa, who has pledged to rid the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, of corrupt officials. Darren Taylor reports.
There have been a lot of rumors lately about Mkhize's alleged links with private communications firm Digital Vibes. Last year, his department gave the company a contract worth 150 million rands, about $11 million, to coordinate public information campaigns about COVID-19. Mkhize told reporters today he appointed independent financial forensic investigators a few months ago to probe his department's interactions with Digital Vibes.
In summary, the investigation has found that the tender bidding process followed was in contravention of the Public Finance Management Act. The process of appointing Digital Vibes was irregular. Irregularity findings range from inconsistencies in the bid committees to lack of disclosure of conflict of interest.
Mkhize said the contract was in clear contravention of departmental policies.
As a result, a total of 150 million that was paid to Digital Vibes was therefore irregular. Taking disciplinary action against all implicated individuals is also underway. Finally, I can also confirm that the legal processes to recover the funds that we believe the department should not have paid has also commenced.
Mkhize says another probe by South Africa's Special Investigations Unit will soon determine whether the situation constituted fraud and corruption. The minister's actions appear commendable, but what has opposition parties calling for Mkhize's head is the fact that Digital Vibes was under the stewardship of two of his close associates, Tayira Mather and Nadira Mitha, his former personal assistant. Mitha left her job in Mkhize's office shortly after the pandemic began in South Africa in March last year.
It was only after several months of that resignation that I was alerted by my office that Ms. Mitha was now working with the communications company. This came about as they reached out to my office to make an appointment to do various TV and radio recordings for the COVID-19 awareness campaign.
Financial records show Mkhize's department paid Digital Vibes millions for work that should have been done by the minister's own communications team. In one instance, the company charged almost 2 million rands for merely accompanying the minister to a meeting. Both Martha and Mitha were communication strategists for Mkhize during his campaign for senior ANC office in 2017. But he's now trying to distance himself from them.
I also do not regard any of these individuals whose names have been mentioned publicly as personal friends, but they are certainly my comrades. I have worked with them in the ordinary course of my political or official duties, and this is not unusual.
But citizens are asking, is the man respected for guiding South Africa through the pandemic with his science-based approach corrupt? Did he receive a slice of the Digital Vibes pie? No, on both counts, says Mkhize.
I did not participate in the company's appointment process. I did not in any way influence the selection of employees or consultants of the company. Even at a departmental level, the minister is only informed once the whole procurement and administrative process has been concluded.
Mkhize says, if corruption happened in my department, I didn't know about it. Many South Africans are hoping that one of the few cabinet ministers they regard as competent is indeed as ignorant and therefore innocent as he's proclaiming. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
With Mali President, Prime Minister in military custody, the Economic Community of Western Africa, ECOWAS, has dispatched a delegation to the capital, Bamako, in a bid to resolve a political crisis that threatens to derail a transition back to democracy. The delegation, led by former Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan, already has met with the country's interim vice president, Colonel Assimi Goïta. Goïta, according to a Reuters report, said he stripped President Bahandao and Prime Minister Moktar Ouen of their posts because they failed to consult with him about a cabinet reshuffle. Gawita is the officer who led a coup against the previous president last August. Goodluck's delegation is expected to meet today with Ndao and Uwain, who are all being held at the Kati military base outside of Bamako. VOA's Margaret Bashir reports from New York that UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is following the evolving situation in Mali very closely. Guterres continues to call for calm and for the immediate release of detained civilian leaders. The African Union, France, the United States, the United Kingdom, Germany, and the European Union also have expressed deep concern at the ongoing situation in Mali. Following the devastating Goma volcanic eruption and swarm of earthquakes, residents are urging the government to provide immediate assistance. To understand how the government is responding to the crisis, journalist Anastasie Tudesh sat down for an interview with Congo's Minister of Communications and Government Spokesman, Patrick Muyaya. She began by asking how the government is organizing aid to Goma, a city that already was suffering a surge of violence by militia fighters.
The situation now, the emergency is the humanitarian question. That's why the government sent a huge delegation to work closely with the local authority to make the whole evaluation about first humanitarian level, security, and scientific, because here politicians come in the second level. The first level is the scientists who's monitoring every day the movement around the volcano. And from their input, the government will see what can be the strategy. The first level here, the idea is to see the way we can protect people. And then the government, after the whole evaluation, will see what kind of needs people has now, what can we do, what can we do with MONUSCO and other international NGOs who are working in the ground to see the way we can have a quick answer to help those people.
She then asked how the government will be able to fund the support needed to Goma.
It's a natural catastrophe, a situation we didn't prevent. But the government, we have a budget, we have all our difficulties, but we have something always to face those kind of situation. That's why we start already, before to send the government delegation yesterday, we started to work with people there in Goma, with the local authority, to give them what they need first to start to intervene. And now we are making this huge evaluation. And then if we don't have enough fund, we're going to call Congolese people, we're going to mobilize them. We're going to mobilize them. And then we can see if we can mobilize international community to come closely with us to see the way, to see the way they can bring some support to help us to solve those issues.
That was Congo's Minister of Communications and Government spokesman, Patrick Muyaya, speaking with journalist Anastasie Tudesh. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. ECOWAS has dispatched a delegation to Bamako to resolve the political crisis in Mali. And a senior UN official warns of a looming famine in Ethiopia's war-torn Tigray region. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. A traditional court in Zimbabwe has ordered that former President Robert Mugabe's body be exhumed, reigniting disputes over where he was buried. But experts say the ruling did not follow established rules and may have exceeded the court's powers. Traditional courts differ from regular government courts and follow community customs. Reporter Kudzadze Nwashi has the details.
The traditional court said Mugabe's widow, Grace, broke customary law when her late husband was buried in the courtyard of the royal family home in 2019 after weeks of dispute with the government, which wanted to have his remains in the National Heroes Acre. Mrs. Mugabe was absent from the court proceedings and was ordered Thursday to exhume the body, rebury it in the National Heroes Acre, and pay a fine of 5 cows and a goat. Leo Mugabe is Robert Mugabe's nephew.
Obviously, they will need a court order, in which case, you know, we will oppose that court order in the court. They must be rest assured that the route that they have taken is the wrong route. What they should have done is to engage the Mugabe family rather than act as if they don't know how the culture is.
Under Zimbabwe's patriarchal traditions, Grace Mugabe is considered an outsider to the Mugabe clan. And if there was a case in the customary courts for the family to answer, then the male with Mugabe bloodlines should have been summoned to answer instead of his widow. Professor Lovemore Maduku is a constitutional lawyer.
Yeah, I don't think we have a custom in Zimbabwe, of any community in Zimbabwe, that will treat a wife in the way that this particular community court is trying to do. Although customary law courts have power to determine certain issues relating to customary law, but the issue relating to exhuming a person who has already been buried is not governed by customary law currently under our law, the law as it stands at the moment. The customs of Zimbabwe, they are community-specific. So the customs we have, they go by, you know, communities. The maximum that they can go is to ask you to pay damages, but not to exhume.
Leo Mugabe says the case has a lot of curious sticking points.
Who is implementing this judgment? And I'm sure if it is government that is implementing the judgment, they would need to know that, you know, this particular chief has no jurisdiction over Kutama village. We'll wait, because the judgment does not come to us. We're only getting all this through the social media ourselves. We have not seen any summons. We have not seen anything. And I'm not sure why the chief is doing this.
Maduku says the judgment may not stand.
They will seek what is called a review. That decision will not survive any higher court, like from the high court onwards. People should not take it seriously. I think that it will just be set aside on the basis, first, that the court must have gone beyond its jurisdiction. Secondly, the decision made is irrational.
While all this unfolds, Grace Mugabe's absence has been very evident. Family loyalists accuse government of being the third party in the case, with an ulterior motive to rebury Mugabe at the National Shrine. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinawashe from Harare.
Mark Lowcock, the UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief, warned the Security Council yesterday that urgent aid is needed to avoid severe hunger in Ethiopia's war-torn Tigray region. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed sent troops into Tigray in early November to disarm and detain leaders of the regional ruling party, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF. He said the move came in response to TPLF attacks on federal army camps. More than 6 months later, an estimated 2 million people have been displaced, and Lowcock says fighting and abuses continue in Tigray. He added that rape and other forms of sexual violence are widespread and systematic. Public and private infrastructure and objects indispensable to the survival of civilians have been destroyed, Lockwood added. Abiy's government says it is committed to investigating human rights abuses and grants full and unhindered access for aid workers. Uganda is battling a second wave of COVID-19, which has been predicted to be much more worse than the first one. Within about 3 weeks, the country has reported almost 3,000 new infections, with many reporting moderate to critical forms of the disease. Katri Nambi reports from Kampala.
Since the second wave hit Uganda towards the end of last month, medics and health officials have seen a sharp rise in the number of severe cases, a situation that is overwhelming treatment facilities. Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
The situation is not good. The number of cases are increasing daily. The resurgence is true. It is real. Our isolation facilities, especially the intensive care unit at Mulago, is already full. If you are eligible for a bed right now, you may go on a waiting list. Even the children, we have children in our isolation facilities.
The medics say that what is more worrying is that the new patients require 10 times more oxygen, yet the available accessories have already run out. Dr. Muhammad Mubiru is the principal hospital administrator at Entebbe General Hospital, one of the isolation and treatment facilities.
And this also includes the youth 20, 22, 23. So, and the condition is not the usual one. So many of them are on oxygen.
Also, characteristic of the resurgence is that the patients deteriorate into ICU within a very short time as compared with the first wave. Dr. Moses Mwanga is the director of Entebbe General Hospital.
Those days, the person will progress slowly. But you see things happening within the few hours this person has come. You see the person who can breathe changes within a short time. But those days, you wait. But these days, a person in one day can change what the other person will change in a week.
The resurgence comes at a time many Ugandans have abandoned the rules for preventing COVID-19. And the government is considering a new lockdown if the caseload continues to rise. Health Minister Acheng has advised Ugandans to protect themselves from COVID-19.
If people are not careful, we may end up losing many more people than we did before, because apparently Ugandans seem to have forgotten that we have COVID-19 and people are back to their normal life. People don't want to wear masks. People don't want to sanitize. They don't want to social distance. So my appeal to you is to take COVID-19 very seriously and to take this resurgence as more dangerous than the first.
Uganda is currently administering the second dose of vaccine to those who received the first one in March. But it seems many Ugandans have shunned the vaccinations. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Tensions continue to build in Nigeria as it awaits a new army chief following the death of Lieutenant General Ibrahim Atahuri in a plane crash. Critics are urging President Muhammadu Buhari to quickly fill the position because the situation is taking on an ethnic dimension. For more, International Edition's Chinedu Ofor spoke with security analyst Abubakar Mohammed. That was Nigerian security Abubakar Mohammed speaking with VOA's Chinedu Ofor from Maiduguri.
It's a very sensitive one. And over time, Nigerians have come to rely on the army, on the armed forces, but I think especially on the army because of the myriad of the low-intensity conflicts that the country is being confronted with. There is problem in the southeast, the Boko Haram is there, the banditry, and so on and so forth. So usually you see the army is the one that is being brought in to stabilize the situation. So a situation whereby the army has no any substantial head, Nigeria will be very apprehensive. Then I think the second reason is because of our politicization of everything. I think the most senior officer in the Nigerian army at the moment is somebody from Anambra, Major General Ben Ahonatu, I think. So some people are expecting the president to appoint someone from the southeast. The third one is the army generals themselves, they are overambitious. So most of them want to take over from where the former chief has left. People are already, you know, lobbying and doing everything they could to see that they take over the mantle of leadership. In any case, it is overdue.
Some analysts are worried that the selection of the head of the Nigerian army is assuming an ethnic dimension.
I don't think the army goes with this ethnicity, whatever we have in Nigeria. You know, because they know themselves. I think it's a system that is very rigid, and whatever you are due for, you know it. And you know your mate, you know who is your senior, who is your junior. To some extent, the appointment of the service chief, the president has power. Let's just say maybe 60-70% to appoint whomsoever he will. But they have their own system, and I think no matter how somebody would say he would try to manipulate it, the system has internal process of controlling itself.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbiya Farrow, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.